I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. I'm Janet.
I'm Mel.
I'm Helen.
I'm Tammy.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, ABGs and ABBs. Today's episode is regarding a topic that is rather sensitive, but one that we encourage you all to lean into. We will do our best to provide accurate information, share our personal thoughts and feelings, and provide tangible resources and suggested actions. Thank you all ahead of time for coming to this podcast with open ears, an open heart, and an open mind.
I'm sure a lot of you have seen the news already. In the last month, the U.S. has seen a massive spike in anti-Asian hate crimes. According to NYPD data, there has been a 1,900% increase in anti-Asian hate crimes in the U.S. this past year. To give you a sense of what this means, there were 20 incidents in the first half of 2020 alone, compared to one in the entire year of 2019. And 7.3% of the reports counted the most vulnerable, elderly Asians as victims. In just 1 week, we saw an 84-year-old Thai man, Vicha Ratanabhakdi, shoved to the ground and murdered in San Francisco for merely existing. Noel Quintana, a 61-year-old Filipino man, had his face slashed ear to ear with a box cutter in the New York City subway. A 91-year-old Asian American elder was shoved to the concrete sidewalk and left to die. A 64-year-old Vietnamese-American woman in San Jose was mugged in broad daylight, and the list continues, with a disproportionate focus by mainstream media. Much of this rise in anti-Asian hate activity started with the onset of the pandemic. An August 2020 UN report showed that there were more than 1,800 racist incidents against Asian Americans in the U.S. over an 8-week period from March to May 2020. Many of these crimes have been ignored and even excused. These activities have prompted intense sadness, frustration, anger, and fear amidst the Asian and Asian American community.
Today we have Tammy Cho and Michelle Hanabusa, co-founders of Hate is a Virus, a community of mobilizers and amplifiers that exist to dismantle racism and hate. Tammy and Michelle started Hate is a Virus in April 2020 in response to the rise in hate crimes against Asian American Pacific Islanders due to the pandemic. In the past year, they raised more than $30,000 for essential Black, Indigenous, and People of Color, or BIPOC, community organizations, and hosted two virtual fundraising events featuring guests like Sandra Oh, Baron Davis, Apollo Ono, Mariah Nagasu, and more. Please welcome to the Asian Boss Girl podcast, Tammy Cho and Michelle Hanabusa.
Thank you, ladies, so much for being here with us today. I know we wish we could be, you know, here on better terms and for better reasons, but very excited to have you nonetheless. And we just want to start out by kind of, you know, before we dive into the work that you're doing, how have each of you been processing all of the events personally?
Yeah, it's, to be honest, it's been a lot. I've definitely felt a bit overwhelmed. I think a lot of folks can empathize that this past year has been tough in and of itself because of the pandemic and all the change and not being able to connect with the folks that we're used to. But, you know, seeing the rise in these hate crimes against some of the most vulnerable populations within our own communities. You know, we've seen kids getting bullied in school, seeing the elderly attacked. It's been a lot to process and then definitely working through it personally.
Yeah, I agree with Tammy. I think there was a range of emotions, just roller coasters throughout the couple weeks. And, you know, there's some days that I wake up and I feel positive because I'm like, we're doing the work, we're talking to different organizations, trying to figure out what are the action steps that we can take. But then at the same time, you continue to see these hate crimes, and you're talking to fellow people in our community who are so hurt and like grieving from this as well too. And so it's a really tough time for us, but I think I can reassure that Tammy and I are trying to hang in there and continue to just push and do good work.
Thank you, ladies, for doing the work. We definitely see that both of you are really putting in the work to do that, and I know that takes a lot of mental energy to execute on that work, so thank you for doing that. You know, many people were angered and frustrated by the pandemic and the wave of hate crimes that started drawing the public eye in 2020. How did you go about deciding that hate as a virus was how you wanted to contribute and respond to the events? Maybe, Michelle, you can share with us how hate as a virus started?
Sure. You know, the name Hate is a Virus, it started in my living room, actually, back in March of 2020. And so Carrie Okubo, Saul Lopez were actually in my living room, and we were kind of just trying to make sense of like what was going on in our community, things that we were seeing on our feed, you know, via social media, but then also hearing things that were happening locally in downtown Little Tokyo, Koreatown, Chinatown. And, you know, we were just sitting there being like, we can't just sit here and be silent. We have to do something. And so Carrie Okubo, who is a core member of Hate is a Virus team as well, she's incredible. And she was the one that coined the term Hate is a Virus. And we're like, this is a good, catchy name. I kind of like that. And, you know, we didn't have any expectations or really a plan of what we were doing with it. All we wanted to do was gather folks within our community to do food crawls, actually. And so we put together a very short notice food crawl to go support a local restaurant in K-Town, actually. And 2 days later, lockdown happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in between that time, I believe I posted on social media, and that's where Tammy reached out and was like, hey, let me know what I can do to help. And we're here, and now she's our CEO. So,
hey, I didn't know that was the birthing story of Hate is a Virus. Well, I work in social media, so like my other side is like, that's very catchy. It's a very good social campaign. But at the same time, I like how Hate is a Virus encompasses everything. Like, it's us versus racism and hate versus like Asian Americans versus like whatever. So I feel like it's a collective term that I think a lot of us can resonate with, especially with what's going on. But thank you for sharing, Michelle. So Jan and I reached out to Tammy last week, or a few weeks ago. We initially wanted to reach out because we saw all the amazing things Hate is a Virus is doing, you know, and we wanted to figure out, you know, what we can do as Asian Boss Girl, our platform, to do to help with what's going on with our Asian American community. I think I called Tammy, I messaged Tammy, and I was like, hi, please let me know if there's anything that we can do or I can do to help. I think sometimes when all this stuff is going on, like you mentioned earlier, like it's a lot of process. It's a lot of like figuring out what we can even do. Like, what are the action items, action steps that we can do to support or help? This turned into like a conversation I had with Tammy. And I think Tammy brought up some really interesting points of what's going on within, I guess, like learning how to take action in our community, because I feel there's so many different like players in this community and how we can do our part. And I'd love for you to share what you shared with Janet and I on that call.
Yeah, definitely a lot of stuff to process with everything that's going on. And I think especially in this world, it's both a blessing, but also could be a curse that we have access to social media, right? And mm-hmm. we're constantly being inundated with so much noise, whether it's media or infographics or photos, stories that are being constantly posted, which is great for driving awareness. But at the same time, there's the question of, okay, so there's all these different solutions being thrown around and action steps to take. Who can I really listen to, right? And I think oftentimes in these situations too, something that we observed, and I think others have started to observe as well, is we have a tendency to look towards folks with really large platforms, right? Folks like celebrities, you know, public figures for the answers and to kind of lead us into this right direction and be the one who is the one to push for change and solve everything in one solution. But in reality, that's not the case, right? Something that, you know, Michelle and I have talked about a lot is the power comes from the people, and people are the ones that really drive the change, and there are action steps that we can take to be a part of the solution. Folks that we can also look towards for, you know, who are driving the change are these different community organizers, right? Folks that have been serving at these nonprofit organizations for decades, who have been doing the groundwork, and looking towards them for action steps is something that we can also focus more on as a community. And I think we're starting to take the steps to do that a bit, right? We're starting to find out, you know, who are these organizations? What kind of work have they been doing? There are organizations that have been providing, you know, mental health services to our API community. There are other organizations that are finding ways to serve the elderly. And so really, you know, as a community, finding ways, like, how can we look for these organizations and how can we engage with them and continue to support them, as opposed to relying on celebrities or other public figures for those answers?
Yeah, I think Tammy said it perfectly. And, you know, I think at the beginning of Hate is a Virus, right, we definitely relied on our community, people that we know, to kind of help amplify, like, what we're doing with Hate is a Virus, because it was a very, like, reactionary movement that was starting. But I think over this past year of just doing the work and really, like, learning from other folks as well, we've kind of found ourselves in a really interesting position of kind of almost being, like, the middleman of working really well with celebrities or people with larger platforms, but then also having contacts and ways to also communicate with the organizations that are doing the groundwork. We both feel that there's really important components to both sides, but it's like, how can we all come together and work together?
I love how Hate is a Virus is like this middle, you guys are like the middleman, trying to bring everyone together. And I do think, especially in this time, like, we should all come together as a collective. So after realizing this, like, interesting, I guess, position for Hate as a Virus, like, what are some ways you guys are responding as an organization to, like, the recent influx of hate crimes against Asian Americans?
Yeah, so we have a few different initiatives in the works. You know, first and foremost, we believe in the power of continuing to drive awareness. And so we've been trying to organize, you know, our community to continue to speak up about these issues. And it could be, you know, in the form of putting a social media post out there, right? And you can hashtag Hate as a Virus. But it could also just be reaching out to a trusted friend or family member to initiate a conversation about this, ask them, check in on them and see how they're feeling, if they've heard about the news and how they've been processing it. The other way that we've been addressing this is also through education. So, you know, creating these safe spaces where we can have dialogue and really learn about and talk about what's happening in our community, right? And I think there's a lot of questions that we also hear within the community about, and we're also scared to ask it out of fear, you know, that we might experience some type of lashback. But we need to ask those questions, even if they might sound silly to us, so that we can learn and grow together. And so we're hoping to create this space where people can ask these questions and we can help answer them. And again, in partnership with other incredible organizations as well. And then the other piece that we are really focused on is, again, finding ways to partner with other community organizations, because it's not going to be one single organization that solves all of this, right? This has been an issue that has been going on for so long, and it's not going to be solved overnight. We really need different nonprofits, people that are listening to this podcast, to be engaged and involved for us to really push for change. And so we want to continue to find partners through this and really build a coalition of folks of different backgrounds, different industries, to come together and align and push for change.
Can you share with us some of the organizations that you have been speaking with or working with?
Yeah, so there are a few different organizations that we've had the opportunity to talk to over this past year working on Hate is a Virus that we really admire. You know, one of them is LA Versus Hate. They're local to Los Angeles, but they've been working on a really great initiative trying to push out the 211 number to encourage folks to report hate crimes. Mm-hmm. And this is really important because, you know, to really understand how deep these issues run and what type of hate crimes are being committed is really important in terms of shaping policy, shaping the type of programs that are catered to our community as well. So they're one of the organizations that we're really excited to continue conversations with. Another organization along the lines of, you know, reporting hate crimes is Stop API Hate. They're another great organization to continue reporting hate crimes to. They've already collected over 2,800 reports this past year, which is really, really unfortunate, but also so important for us to capture. Mm-hmm. And then one more that I would say is Act to Change is another incredible organization that we were also able to provide a grant to through one of our events this past year as well. And they've been doing excellent work in terms of really addressing bullying among AAPI youth, especially the spike that kids have experienced in the past year due to the rhetoric that's been being used.
Mm. Another org that I would love to add is Nikkei Progressives. And we've had members from Nikkei Progressives, Kathy Masaoka, Tracy as well, to even come up and speak as a guest for our Real Talk Tuesdays, which happens every Tuesday on our IGTV Live. They do incredible work. They've been around for many, many years. Kathy just spoke today talking about the HR 40. So they do these like weekly educational, I wouldn't say town halls, but like meetings where they really dive in to the history, so many aspects of like the Asian American history as well, and how that affects things that we're dealing with today. So shout outs to Nikkei Progressives.
Yeah.
Shout out to all of these organizations. It makes me feel so good to hear that these sort of longer term solutions are being put into action. I know when all of this was happening, a lot of people were very reactionary, like, okay, what do we do? What can we do tomorrow? What can we do today? What should we tell our friends? And like scavenging the internet to see, you know, the different infographics and things for like a quick A, B, and C, do this, this, and this, and then we'll be good. But I think to what you ladies are, the work that you ladies are doing is more for a long-term solution, which is incredibly necessary if we want to see actual change. So thank you so much for doing all that work.
And even speaking of the, you know, when kind of major events happen and that reaction, something that we had talked about internally, Mel had mentioned, you know, when she started seeing all these posts come up, she had put out a call on her stories just asking, you know, hey, if anyone has resources to share, you know, let us know. And it was like crickets. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have anyone pushing through with any type of like useful, tangible like actions that we could take. And this was kind of a trend that we noticed, and we had talked to our friends about, why do you ladies think that it has been so challenging for Asian Americans to mobilize and take collective action?
That's a really great question. And I think it's something that we're continuing to discuss as well. I think on one end, in terms of the different types of resources and call to actions that are available, I think there are a lot of ideas that are being thrown out, and that could also lead to some paralysis, right, in terms of like which action do I take among all of these different options. And also recognizing that because this is such a complex, nuanced issue, there's no one solution to it all. So it's not going to be as easy and simple, unfortunately, to wrap up into an infographic. But at the same time, you know, I think that there are little steps that we can start to take, both in the short term, but also setting ourselves up for the long term, right? So in the short term, what we do know is, you know, we can continue to amplify these messages, right? Regardless of the size of your platform. We know that, you know, you can still take the steps to learn more about these issues, dive into our history a little bit more. I think on that note too, I think that that is one of the other components as to why some folks might be hesitant. Obviously not speaking for everybody in the community, but even for me personally, if this was me just a few years ago, like I imagine that I would have been very scared to speak up about these issues, right? Because I don't know much, you know, I didn't know much about our AAPI history. It's not something that we're taught in schools, right? And it's not conversations that we've typically have in our own households, right? It's something that we typically don't even talk about in households or intentionally avoid. And so I think there's still a lot of learning in dialogue and practice that we have to do and grow that muscle of becoming more confident about using our voice and speaking up about these issues.
Yeah, and just to jump off of what Tammy just said, 170 plus years of Asian American history is not really that long in the grand scheme of things, you know, and also to that point, Asian American history, that is very broad. So there are different like generations that have come through, sometimes even as of recent, right? So there is a large population of Asian America that we have to kind of sort out through within ourselves. And we're still learning through that, right? The activism thing that people are talking about these days so freely, that was all underground for so long. And it was almost like this hidden work that like you can't show off and put it in your bios and be like, yes, I'm an activist, right? That was all underground work that was really inspired by the civil rights movement. So with that in mind too, because that was underground, now it's starting to be a thing with social media and just a lot of noise out there. There's going to be a lot of work in terms of like, how do we talk about these things and unify our voices? Because what we saw within the last couple of weeks is a lot of misinformation and things and confusion of what we're supposed to do next. And with that in mind too, it's okay if we're all on different paths or different stages of this activism work or this journey. I think that it's awesome that people are wanting to speak out now and feeling more confident to speak about this. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason why we're all having a conversation about this today, right? Maybe this wouldn't have happened years back. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's so important that we're continuing to just have these conversations and also heal throughout this process. Because this is a long term, and we just have to keep in mind that we just need to do a little bit of work every single day, and hopefully we will find the change that we want to see in the future.
I completely agree with that. I think we need to all tell our stories and just, you know, take up space. I feel like that has not been allowed for us for such a long period of time. And people are now starting to see. I even saw one of my friends who never talks about, you know, Asian issues say, this happened to me the other day where it was a racist incident. Someone like chased her out of a store, called her, you know, names. And she was just like, well, that didn't feel like it's as bad as, you know, other minority groups. So it didn't deserve the space to be told and shared. And she decided that now is the right time to share it because of everything that is going on. And to me, I was like, damn, we should be sharing this stuff all the time, you know, take up space and find value even in the stories that are negative, but these are experiences that make up the Asian American experience, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And to expand on what you were saying just earlier, Michelle, I think there have been some conflicting dialogues around how to take action here and what's the right way to take action, right? For example, some celebrities have offered a bounty for some of the assailants and people were critical of this action. And another one, which I think a majority of us now agree upon, is the criticism of supporting policing in order to protect our elders. What are your perspectives on this? Are there any other narratives and criticisms or trends that you've also observed?
Yeah. I mean, that conversation is a very polarizing conversation. I'm glad that we're having this. I think the first step that we can take instead of just going and resorting to the police is talking to that local community and that local organization that really understands what's going on in that location, because I think it's going to differ per city, per location. So, you know, if there are volunteer works of just making it so that the elders feel safe, I think that there's proper ways to do that. But just kind of jumping the gun and being like, we need more police, I don't think is the answer.
Yeah. And to add to that, too, I think, and part of the reason it's so important to tap into these local communities and organizers, too, is because there's so much history tied to this as well, right, in terms of our relations. It's when we think about what type of solutions and actions that we need to explore, we also need to think about the impact that it has, not just on our own communities, but on other communities as well. And I think if we look at our history of the model minority myth with our AAPI community, right? Part of that myth was created because it was used almost as a way to drive a wedge between Asians and other communities of color. And we'll find that a lot of this broken system and this, you know, these models of white supremacy have affected the type of solutions that we might jump to. And so if there is one solution that we think is good for the AAPI community, it might actually end up hurting a different community. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to be very mindful of that and continue to have open dialogue among all of our different communities when we think about these action steps and mobilize around them.
I think I'm nodding my head off like so much during this conversation. I feel like I'm just learning so much from both of you. I love that you guys are sharing these different perspectives. I think, Tam, I really resonate with what you said earlier. Like, you know, a few years ago, I wouldn't be vocal or wouldn't have said anything before because you were afraid or like wasn't so, you guys, you're not trained to speak out this way. But I feel like both you guys, as I'm listening in this conversation, I feel like I'm learning a lot to even encourage myself and even our listeners to like find ways within themselves to take action. Like, I feel like there's so much pressure to like be the first to respond to something, especially with what's going on. But after hearing you guys both talk about like, hey, we have to be mindful of other, you know, people of color in their communities. Are we doing things that are going to hurt them? That takes a lot of thought and consideration. So even when we want to be vocal, that's the same kind of consideration we got to do within ourselves as we use our platform, as we speak out. So I really want to thank you both just even for educating me and our listeners. I'm just absorbing everything you both are saying.
And I do remember when I was hearing from like the leaders in our community, and they were basically saying like, we can't make this a find the perpetrators and call the cops on them. And initially I was like, well, why not? Like at the surface level, that's clearly the immediate answer to, okay, our elders are being hurt. Call the cops, figure it out, you know, mm-hmm. but it's because we have a generations of mistrust and pain between mm-hmm. different minority groups. And we know that, you know, certain people are dealt unfair cards. Minorities are dealt unfair cards in the system of what you were saying, white supremacy, right? And it's the mm-hmm. same system that we all have to play in. Mm-hmm. So we need to figure out how to not just call the cops for an easy solution and further that cycle of bad policing. It's figuring out what is a real solution that we can do to come together as a group sort of to fight that power.
Yeah, and I think that's totally okay for you to have reacted that way or even ask those questions of like, well, why not? Like, why can't we have police protect mm-hmm. us? I think that's totally okay because like you are also open to hearing the other reasons why that may not be okay and how that might hurt other persons of color. And, you know, a really interesting conversation that we've been having, Tammy and I, with other community organizers, right, is how can folks just like us, everyday folks who are really passionate and want to do something about this, start these conversations with trusted folks in the community? I think that there are some notions of, wait, I'm too scared to even ask these questions because I might say the wrong thing, or I'm not educated enough about this, so I'm just not going to say anything at all. I think that there's also a fine balance of like community organizers to also being able to open up these spaces so that we can all learn because we're at different points of this journey. And hopefully that way we're going to be able to like all like understand like where everyone's coming from and then push the right agenda and the right message out there.
I have an ongoing relationship with stress and anxiety. I'm someone that had moments of anxiety as a high school kid, but it definitely intensified once I became an adult. Besides going to therapy to help manage it, I also have friends who deal with anxiety to call on when I'm feeling super anxious. A friend referred me to CBD for those intense moments, and I've been a big fan ever since. I currently use Ned, and already recommended this brand to many of my other friends. I'm currently using Ned's hemp oil, and only contains two ingredients, full-spectrum hemp extract and non-GMO organic MCT oil. For moments I feel super overwhelmed and can't meditate, I drop their hemp oil and let it ease away my stress. If you want to check out Ned and try their CBD for yourself, we have a special offer for ABG listeners. Go to www.helloned.com/ABG and enter ABG at checkout for 15% off your first one-time order or 20% off your first subscription order plus free shipping. That's HELLONED.com/ABG to get 15% off your first one-time order or 20% off your first subscription order plus free shipping. Thank you, Ned.
Tax time can be very stressful. One way to minimize the stress and feel like you have your shit just a little more together is to go to the same tax resource year after year. At H&R Block, when you choose to work with the same tax pro you used last, they'll get to know you and your tax situation, which helps them find every credit and deduction you're entitled to. H&R Block knows the numbers, and by working with them every year, they can also get to know you and your personal tax situation. And because they don't want you to be surprised at tax time, they're upfront and transparent with their pricing. For 20% off online tax filings, go to hrblock.com/bossgirl. That's hrblock.com/bossgirl for 20% off online tax filings.
Hi everyone, Helen here, and I wanted to remind you that we are now going on week 5 of our live weekly show on the Stereo app. Thank you so much for the people who have been tuning in to our episodes. These are usually 35 to even 60 minutes long, depending on the topic, and we just go off the cuff, unscripted, giving y'all some extra ear candy each week. So if you are interested in tuning in, check out the notes in the description of this podcast episode, or check out our link tree on our Instagram bio. We have this week's scheduled show link out and ready to go. And yes, Stereo is free for any of you who have yet to download the app. What I like about the platform so far is that our listeners, meaning you, you're able to connect with us by sending us real-time audio messages so that we can answer those on the spot. This app allows podcast creators like us to build an even more intimate relationship with our listeners by engaging y'all in direct conversations. Again, check out the link in the description of the show notes or the link in our Instagram bio. Join us every week on the Stereo app. I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot! That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I love that you're setting the context for the situation being that we are in a state of wanting to absorb information and to like slow down, to think things through, to read, to inform ourselves. As we've seen that there were, you know, we said that initially there was like a bit of silence after all of this happened because we couldn't figure out what to do. But there was also a lot of people like criticizing anything that was being done. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that Tammy, you could just talk a little bit about that, because I know on our Mel and I, when we had called you, I think that day you had mentioned something about someone's reaction to like a celebrity's response. And just wondering how you ladies would respond to, you know, anyone who has criticism for any type of actions that are being taken.
Yeah, that's such a great question. And, you know, it's something that we've seen quite a few times while working on these issues. But in terms of folks experiencing lashback for not necessarily speaking up right away on their platforms, you know, I think Michelle touched on this a little bit earlier as well, but I think it's just also remembering that everybody has their independent journeys and timelines and paths when it comes to finding their voice and how they really want to use their voice to activate around these issues. And so, you know, I think we also need to have more empathy for folks, right? And not jump to conclusions or make assumptions about folks. You know, one person might not be as vocal on social media, but they might be actually behind the scenes fundraising and donating to these causes. They might be doing the internal work of reading books and learning about the history and trying to become more educated on these issues. And those type of actions are just as important as speaking up on your platforms, right? And I would almost even argue that it's better to be take more time, be more informed about what you say, and thoughtful, intentional about what you say, and then speak your truth, as opposed to just reacting and spreading potential misinformation out there, right? And so I want to encourage our community just to continue to treat each other with grace and love, and just support each other in this space, because it's a hard topic to navigate. Mm-hmm. This is a really, really tough situation and a tough issue to talk about as a community, and we're really all learning and growing, and let's hopefully grow together.
Now, those are beautiful words, Tammy. I think as you're speaking or talking about this, it just reminds me of, like, stories that, like, I have some friends that that were vocal, you know, during previous, like, social situations, and these are my Asian American friends, but they're a little bit more, I guess, quieter this time around, because, you know, after some conversations with them, like, you realize how the racism going on within our community against the Asian Americans is actually very, they have some, like, personal stories that are deeply rooted that they don't actually feel comfortable speaking out about, because talking about these situations brings out a very dark memory for them, because some of their parents were attacked when they were kids. So it's just like, I can only imagine that for a lot of individuals in our community, that this time is very, like, it's very painful for them, not only processing what's going on with other people, but it brings back really dark memories for them as children. Because, like, one of my friends was telling me how she never told me this, but her parents were, like, verbally abused because they're Asian. And then she was like, this time is really, it's a scary time for her, because it just brings back really dark memories for her. And I'm like, I think for me, as I see people speak out and people who don't speak out, I'm just like, you know, I try to remind myself to not judge their silence, because they're probably going through some internal things that they're trying to process before even making a statement or even wanting to. So I appreciate what you had to say about, you know, being more empathetic towards everyone in our community. I'm also very curious because about another thing is that, you know, what's going on right now, this is not the first wave of hate crimes against Asian Americans that, you know, you and your team at Hate is a Virus have been active in. I know you guys began last year in April during the onset of the pandemic. And, you know, this time your work is a little bit different. It's evolving. It kind of feels like the second wave. I guess, how is your work different this time around versus the first initial wave last year?
I would love for Tammy to elaborate on kind of like where we're heading for 2021. But, you know, at the start of this, you know, Hate is a Virus was also a reactionary thing. We saw something happen. We're like, we have to do it. And, you know, we were able to have Raise a Million, Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 events. We were pulling resources and pushing out infographics. We were also utilizing, you know, the power of social media, right? And within our network who have a larger platform. But I think throughout that year, we have learned a lot and figured out, like, yes, where is our positioning for Hate is a Virus? What can we do to actually create good impact? And I think now that it's more than just a movement, right? It's a nonprofit organization, and there are things that we have to be accountable ourselves as a nonprofit, and things that we can do so we're less reactionary moving forward. So I think that's something that, like, us as a team have really learned and grown from.
Yeah, and to add to that too, I think we have seen our community learn and grow too. It's been kind of cool to witness it. I think when the events were happening last year, I think a lot of folks were shocked, and they did recognize that this was a problem, but I think people were still really scared to speak up and use their voices, right? And this year, with this second wave of incidents of hate crimes, I think we're seeing it's like a second wake-up call to our community. And I think a lot of folks have also had some time to learn more about our history and why these incidents were happening, especially related to BLM and then also these hate crimes as well. And so people are becoming more confident about speaking up and voicing that this is not okay. And so that's been really, really impactful. And a conversation that we've been having recently as well is now that it seems like what the first step that we were really pushing for was continuing to drive awareness of these hate crimes and how serious it was, right? That it's not just like a one-off event that was happening last year. It's something that had continued to persist, especially after COVID-19. And so I think the question now has been shifting to what are the actions that we can take as a community, and people are wanting to know, how can I'm ready to activate, so what can I do now? And so that's also something that we've been focusing more on as an organization, is really thinking about what are some action steps that we can provide to our community, again, that are informed by existing boots on the ground community organizations. And so something that we are working on currently is we are building a coalition to be able to bring in a different members of our API community, as well as other BIPOC organizations with different backgrounds, right? So this includes activists, this includes community organizers, celebrities, and really bridging conversations across all of us to figure out what are the needs in our community and what can we amplify. And then the second big initiative that we are focused on that we launched this week is a fund. It's called the Community Action Fund. We're raising $1 million to give back to our community organizations that are offering really important services for our community, whether it's around mental health, again, you know, providing better care for our API elderly, really thinking about all the different areas that our community needs support in and being able to give back to these organizations.
Wow, that is an amazing plethora of activities that you've just gone through. And I feel like just as someone who is feeling that emotional tenseness and the anxiousness, just hearing the plan laid out like that is already giving me a bit of relief. But for our listeners who are feeling overwhelmed, you know, you've laid out kind of actions that Hate Is a Virus is going to take and the various other active members in the community. For anyone who's listening out there and feeling overwhelmed sitting at home, if there was only one action that they should take, what would you recommend it be?
You know, I think action steps are very personal. And so I would encourage listeners to find, you know, think about, you know, every person has a different gift. And so just think about, you know, what is your gift and how do you want to take action, right? It could be if what you're most comfortable with right now is just learning about these issues, you can read books. You know, Minor Feelings by Kathy Park Hong is a great recommendation that I would suggest to folks. If art is your favorite form of expression, potentially that's something, that's a way that you can take action as well, right? And I think Michelle can speak more to this as well, but we've just had such an incredible community of artists that just, you know, started posting photos with Hate Is a Virus and, you know, healing art pieces that really, really spoke to what's happening in the world right now. But also, it helped people feel like they're not alone, right? Seeing these art pieces, and it captured so many of the emotions that we're feeling that words cannot necessarily express. And so I would just encourage everyone listening to just find the action step that resonates most with them.
Yeah, I love what Tammy just said, and I can definitely speak on the art aspect of it, even just on a personal level. Like, ever since I could remember public speaking or using my voice by talking has always given me anxiety. And it was never my strongest suit. But I think that whether it was through dance or it was through sports or even art, I was a graphic designer for many, many years, using those types of ways to kind of vocalize how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, has really been a really great tool for me as a personal, like my individual self. But I think, you know, the work that we've been doing with Hate Is a Virus too, there's so many people out there that are using art as a medium to speak up for like healing tools and that sort of thing. So I think it's a really beautiful blend that we can use in terms of like action steps that we can all take. And something with the book, something that I'm doing right now personally, I was just talking to Sean Miuda, I do want to give him a shout out because he's been really like behind the scenes talking to us, Tammy and I, on different things. But I was just like, I want to do more reading, you know? What are some books that are out there that are not being shared around right now? And so there's three books that he recommended, and I've already ordered it from local bookstores here in Los Angeles. So it's Asian Settler Colonialism by Candice Fujikane. And then there's Freedom Dreams, The Black Radical Imagination by Robin DJ Kelly. And then the third book is A Violent Peace by Christine Hong. So I just ordered them. I'm really looking forward to reading this and just like continuing to educate myself more.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing those resources and also different activities that people can be doing, whether it's through reading, art. And also I love just, Tammy, what you said earlier, use the gift that you personally have to express yourself. It's going to be different for each person. Thank you for sharing that, ladies.
We talk a lot about self-care on this podcast. And for Helen and myself, we often emphasize that exercise is a significant part of both of our self-care routines. For any of our listeners who are also into working out, we want to share with you something new that one of our partners, SoulCycle, now offers. The SoulCycle at-home bike. This bike comes with a 21-inch touchscreen and sound system specifically engineered for SoulCycle's iconic playlists. Music is actually a huge part of why I enjoy my workouts, and I personally really like the music that SoulCycle classes offer. Your monthly membership gets you unlimited access to live and on-demand SoulCycle classes, as well as unlimited access to the Equinox Plus app, where you can stream classes from other top-tier brands like Equinox, Rumble, DB12, and Pure Yoga. Also, the SoulCycle at-home bike arrives in just 1 to 3 weeks, whereas competitors usually take 2 to 3 months. Get your SoulCycle at-home bike today by visiting mysoulcyclebike.com/ABG and use promo code ABG to get a free pair of at-home select cycling shoes with your purchase. That's mysoulcyclebike.com/ABG, promo code ABG to get a free pair of cycling shoes with the purchase of your SoulCycle at-home bike. mysoulcyclebike.com/ABG, promo code ABG.
When people ask me to describe my style, I would always say it's cozy chic. I love wearing pieces that not only look super cute on the go, but something I can feel comfortable lounging in at home. And y'all know how much I love relaxing at home, so this is a must. With the temperature cooling down in LA, I'm also on the search for something that can keep me warm without blasting the heater. I am so happy I found Jenny Kane. Jenny Kane is our go-to shopping stop for our cozy classics. Their pieces will elevate your home look with their beautiful, inviting neutral colors. You can feel super stylish while feeling comfortable. I have their cashmere fisherman hoodie and oatmeal, and I feel like I'm wearing a cloud. It's beyond comfortable, and I can't seem to take it off. I wear it at home with my PJ bottoms and with my leggings while I'm out getting my groceries. Their sweaters are also lightweight, so you can layer it to change up your style, too. Find your forever pieces at JennyKane.com and get 15% off your first order when you use code ABG at checkout. That's JennyKane.com and use promo code ABG.
Ladies, have you ever sneezed and felt your period leak? No? Just me? I know you ladies out there know what I'm talking about. Our periods, whether they come regular or not, can be both a blessing and also the biggest pest, especially when we're not equipped with the right type of period care. I very recently, just last month, finally tried out a menstrual cup, specifically Flex. And I'm not gonna lie, ladies, the Flex cup is a life changer. I've used tampons for most of my menstrual life, and like many of you, I've had frustrations with longevity, leak protection, and the impact of all of these tampons on our ecosystem. Flex is innovating period care with products that are body safe, made for comfort, and made to keep you moving. They have the Flex Disc, which can be worn for up to 12 hours and holds as much flow as 3 super tampons, and the Flex Cup, which is a reusable cup made with a velvety soft material for a comfortable fit. If you thought about trying a menstrual cup, this is the one. The Flex Cup is 100% reusable and lasts for years. Plus, it's completely body safe and non-toxic. So say goodbye to leaks, mess, and stress, and say hello to healthier periods for people and the planet with Flex. Go to flexfits.com and use code ABG for 20% off Flex Disc Starter Kits, or 10% off your first Flex Cup, plus free U.S. shipping. That's code ABG at Flex, F-L-E-X, Fits, F-I-T-S.com, flexfits.com, code ABG.
I know that, you know, what you two are doing every day and your team are doing every day is not easy. And Hate is a Virus is a platform that holds real power and responsibility now. How are both of you mentally taking care of yourself through all of this?
I think something that I've personally found really helpful is one is definitely having conversations with other folks, again, that I trust. You know, talking to all of you right now or talking to our team about, you know, the issues that are going on and really hearing how everyone feels about the situation has been helpful, because I'm realizing time and time again that I'm not alone in this, right? And I'm not alone in this fight, and that we're all working to learn and fight for our community together. And so I think that has been really encouraging. The other way that I've been trying to take care of my mental health has also been journaling. So I go through waves of journaling and then getting too busy to journal. But when I get really, really busy, I force myself to journal, because I think it's just so helpful to, you know, process my day and just put my thoughts onto paper and really reflect on what's going on and recenter myself as well. So those have been the ways that I've been trying to ground myself during this time.
How about for you, Michelle?
Yes. Something that I'm definitely still working on, it was my 2021 goal to do more exercising. I wouldn't say I have really executed on that front, but I am continuing to do yoga. And sometimes, especially the past few weeks, I've just been lying on my yoga mat. But at least it keeps me away from my phone, away from being in front of the computer, just so I can kind of be within my own self. And journaling, same with Tammy. This is all from 2021 already, so I'm definitely still working on it, and I think I really do have to take it a little bit more seriously.
How about you all? How have you been taking care of your mental health during this time?
I think sometimes it is it's staying aware of what's going on, and sometimes just you get so inundated with all of this information that it does get overwhelming. And there have been many times where I'm like, okay, save this post to read later. This one seems important. Read it later, you know? Mm-hmm. Versus I think right when everything was happening, I was like, okay, I have to read everything that's going on. I have to stay on top of the solutions and what we can share, what we can do on an Asian Boss Girl, because now we have a platform and we do feel a responsibility to speak, you know, on behalf of our listeners sometimes too, and spread different messages to make sure that we're supporting the community and our agenda. But now it's like, okay, save this when you are not in a rush, busy, whatever, sit down, read it all, process it, and don't let it, you know, overwhelm your day, Helen, because you will. So I think that's something that I've just been trying to do myself.
I think for me, I have a tendency to be a bit emotionally delayed when really drastic things happen. So what I'm trying to do differently this time is just actively let myself feel the feelings. And one way that I do feel like helps, and I think has been mentioned multiple times here, is journaling. I think when I take the time to like force myself to talk about or articulate like how I'm feeling and give myself the chance to just like focus on this aspect, it helps to kind of feel the things and move through it versus like pushing it away or just jumping into action without processing.
Yeah. I'm the opposite of Janet where it comes to I'm like a earlier processor. I don't know if that makes any sense.
You feel all the feels right away.
I feel instantly. And it could be, sometimes it's overwhelming. And so I learned a lot. Actually, Helen, what she said about like saving and then re-watching things later when you're mentally ready has been something I've been trying to do more so of. I'm actually really happy Hate is a Virus existed, because I think you guys are such a good resource for people like, you know, our community and me. Like, I reached out to Tammy, and honestly, Tammy, after our call, I felt so relieved because I feel like having someone that like understands, like, to be like, oh, Mel, it's okay. Like, talking to other people, they feel the same way of just pressure, because like Helen mentioned, like, I know ABG, we're not like Daniel Day Kim level or like that celebrity following, but we do feel pressure to make sure that we are speaking up and doing the right part on our platform. And so that the pressure can get to us mentally, and we're always on our phone. Like, all of us are on social media nowadays because, you know, that's all we really have to get information and stuff. And I could feel like a lot, but after that call, I just felt like really like a sigh of relief. I think after I hung up, I looked at Jana, I'm just like, I feel so much better right now just having someone understand and knowing that there's an organization like you guys who are really actively doing the work that we can really trust. And I think that was also something I felt really relieved by. So thank you so much for doing what you do. And for me, just having conversations with both you ladies and this podcast in general has been very therapeutic. And I think, you know, our listeners out there and Helen, Janet, myself are going to walk away from this podcast feeling like, wow, we have amazing people in our community doing the right work. And we feel like we're going to do our best, but we also feel like we're going to be taken care of in some shape or form. So I feel very, very fortunate for this conversation.
I really appreciate you sharing all of that. I'm so happy to hear all of that too. You know, I also want to say a huge thank you to the community organizers that Michelle and I have been had the honor to connect with as well, because you know, they have also shared that this work is our life's work, right? It's going to take a lifetime. It's an ongoing issue, and you know, we'll continue to do the work and continue to push for change, but we need to also take care of ourselves in the process. And so thank you for asking this question and sharing your ways to take care of your mental health. And I hope everyone that's listening also gives themselves permission to take a little break as they need.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Tammy and Michelle, for sharing your perspectives and your guidance with us and our listeners. You both are true AVGs, and we are so grateful for inspired by the work that you are doing. And I also just wanted to close out by saying that, you know, I think we are all still processing all of this, and this is not a conversation that is supposed to provide all of the solutions for our listeners out there. Today's conversation captures where we are in the moment, coming from a place of vulnerability and rawness, and taking the steps to share what we do know so that we can build upon what we know and develop true change in the near future. So thank you both, and thank you everyone for joining us today. Please go check out hateisavirus.org and follow hateisavirus on Instagram for all the amazing work that these ladies are doing. Tammy, Michelle, is there anything going on this week that our listeners can go and support?
Yes. So we're so excited to share, but earlier this week, we launched the Community Action Fund through Hate is a Virus. It's an initiative where we're raising $1 million to support and expand on the groundwork being done in our communities around the nation. And to jumpstart this fund, Kelly Lee from Bling Empire has actually pledged to match the first $25,000 in donations. Wow. And yes, it's super exciting. And so, you know, we are continue to fundraise for this goal. So if you want to join in with us, you can learn more at hateisavirus.org.
Awesome. For links and codes to partners we shared in today's episode, please see our show notes. And for more partnership discounts, head to our website. And if you want to support us, here are some ways you can do so. Follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, and share this episode with your friends. If you'd like to support us through monthly donations to help keep this podcast running, you can do so at anchor.fm/AsianBossGirl/support or get some merch at AsianBossGirl.myshopify.com.
Yes, and last but not least, thank you to our super talented editor, Michelle, for working all her magic on our episodes, including this one. Thank you, ladies, so much. We will catch you all on the next episode.
Bye!
Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to this incredibly important episode. And before you go, we wanted to remind you about our live podcast show that will be happening every week on the Stereo app. Last week, we talked about To All the Boys and Minari, both movies starring Asian American leads that remind us just how unique, beautiful, and nuanced the Asian American experience truly is. The week before, we talked about our favorite Lunar New Year traditions. Stereo is the app for live social conversations, and we want to talk directly with you, our listeners. You can join our show and ask questions and share your experiences and opinions live with us. Download the Stereo app if you haven't already and join us live this week. For a link to the show, check out the description of this episode or check out our Instagram at AsianBossGirl and click on the link that says Weekly Live Show on Stereo. We hope to see you there.